Welcome to Ladies with Gumption, episode 87. Titans are back, bitches. It's also our first episode back from our Patreon summer.
Woohoo!
And you can always check those episodes out on Patreon, and or a couple of them are going to be released for your listening pleasure on Podomatic. We are the Ladies with Gumption. We recap DCTV in a flash. I'm Tatiana, and I'm here with
Jessica
and May.
And you can find us at DCTV Gumption on the Twitters, at ladieswgumption at gmail.com. If you want to send us a nice, long, juicy email, ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. If you want to send us a slightly shorter, but still equally as juicy Tumblr message. And of course, the podcast is available on iTunes, on Google, podcasts or whatever the Apple Music podcast app is, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and Facebook. And of course, you can find us on Podomatic, which is where we are for now hosting our podcast. We have quite a bit of news to discuss. First off, we saw the Birds of Prey trailer. The Birds of Prey trailer. Did we all see it? How do we feel?
Whatever you want to call it, because I don't know if it's like exactly like a trailer, because I didn't think it was long enough to be a trailer, but
yeah, they've been kind of dropping hints more than they have actually giving us a full-on trailer.
Yeah
there will be ladies and they will kick ass, and there are balloons, and that's really all I got from the teaser.
it was pretty short. It gave us just like a little snippet of all of the ladies in action.
I thought
Shadow was supposed to be in this movie, and it is Rosie Perez.
Yeah, it's Rosie Perez's Renee Montoya.
Renee Montoya. Wasn't she supposed to be, though, Renee Montoya, originally? Or was she just like a
maybe she auditioned?
Yeah.
Maybe. Okay. I don't remember.
The first name I heard for Renee was Rosie Perez.
I don't know where I got... There's some One Day at a Time actress that was going to be like in the Birds of Prey movie. And maybe it was just in contention. But I was really, really confused for like a hot second. but okay. Okay, never mind.
Oh, well. our snippet for the Joker movie says incel-friendly Joker movie. And I don't know what that means. I just know it got an 8-minute standing ovation at the Venice Film Festival, which I think is very interesting. So who said it was incel-friendly?
It was a review. Some review said it was.
I didn't actually read the review, so I don't know if they were being like sarcastic or like, you know, if it was a joke, but I just thought like that is a very weird way to describe a movie, especially since it's getting that kind of praise. I think Shang sent us his feedback, was asking us about our thoughts on that. Do you want to pull that up now since we're already talking about it?
Sure, we may as well. My thoughts primarily on Joker movie, because I haven't seen it, of course, are just that the very premise that, like, people being mean to this dude can turn him into something akin to the Joker, because I don't believe he really is the Joker, more like a prototype.
Yeah.
But, that premise alone I don't like, plus mental illness being, like, an explanation for violence, again, also something I don't like, but I haven't seen the movie, so it may not turn out to be that way. Okay.
So Shang was saying, like, there's been many media stories about every loner white man turning into a mass murderer, like the Agent of the Roost storyline for Supergirl. And it could be very well unintended for the Joker to be perceived as sympathetic, but there's always a downside of centering a character's villain origin story, but also trying to explain how he became a violent terrorist. I feel conflicted because I love the Joker in the comics, and I really want to watch the film because I like dark films. But it also feels like I'm going to be supporting a film of a white man who was failed by society and turned into violence. Also, that makes me feel like a huge hypocrite because I also hated the Agent of Liberty backstory. How should I navigate this?
Well, I would, if I was going to answer Shang, I would say the Agent Liberty backstory specifically was engineered to then explain why he became a racist. Whereas the Joker isn't specifically racist or specifically, you know, he's only genocidal in the sense that he's like an anarchist who like doesn't care who gets hurt, when they get hurt, etc. So I don't know, like as much as it is also like, oh no, I feel bad for this man and now he's an evil psychopath. It is also much less, don't know, rooted in like a specific political reality that we're living in. But if it does become kind of like an explanatory story for, like, you know, that's drawing for on your sympathy for him, then I would say just wait until all the reviews for the film are out so that you know if you want to watch it or not.
And yeah, also, I feel like it's kind of weird because, like, and I guess this goes back to the whole incel-friendly title of that review, but isn't it basically, you know, the whole, like, oh, they were laughing at me, I'll make you laugh now kind of thing? Isn't that, like, every white terrorist that's come out in the last, I don't know how many years, that, you know, goes off on, like, a shooting rampage because a girl wouldn't take his phone number or he lost his job or something like that? And so, like, in the movies, in this movie, if that's the kind of route they're going with, that, oh, this poor man, he just wanted to make people laugh and they made fun of him, so why not go on a terrorist rampage? And, you know, how that is, desensitizing people to, like, it's like, you know, when you have, like, a white terrorist and it's like, oh, it's a mental illness, and that's being used instead of, you know, seeing them as the terrorists that they are. And I don't know that movies actually do that. I think they, like, I would be concerned too that they're pulling more on, like, the sympathy and we should be sympathetic, because then that's how you get people that are in love with Charles Manson and Ted Bundy, what's his face, like, you know, like, there's the stands now for two serial killers, and it's just like, how did we, you know,
get, yeah, here? I mean, since obviously we haven't actually seen any footage, like, the full movie, it, from the trailer that I've seen, it, the interesting component for me is that he seems to be targeting, like, rich people, like, that's where his anger is, because Wayne Enterprises, I think, like, I don't know, terminates him or something like that. So I guess from, like, that standpoint, it could be interesting if he just, like, oh, anarchy and, like, overthrow, I don't know, like, Wall Street guys or whatever. That could be, like, a fascinating turn versus, like, him killing, you know, just randos or whatever.
Right.
And then, like, obviously, like, we don't, you know, if they decide to make him, like, a sympathetic character, that's concerning because he is a violent murderer. But then at the same time, they could, I mean, like, Marvel, for example, did the whole doormat employee who got stepped on by, like, the richer types twice in, like, the Spider-Man movies, basically, who was just like, hey, I want my revenge, type attitude. But I don't know how that's going to play here, because it's like, Joker's always been super dark.
You have to wait until, like, the movie comes out, I guess, to see what it's going to do. And, like, you were saying, I think, like, the fact that it's kind of an anarchist storyline, and he has a specific, like, targeting, like, the rich upper class, is another way that makes it different from the Agent of Liberty storyline, in a sense. So there's that.
And I will say, in terms of, like, film festivals, people have to remember that, for the most part, at least the few ones that I've been to, audiences are largely white, older people. Mm-hmm. And whenever they have, like, a certain reaction to a film, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it as well. Like, the whole, just, like, festivals are this, like, little town, in a sense, where all this stuff is happening in a bubble. And then when a lot of films get released to the public, or, like, critics of color, for example, they get critiqued for different reasons that they weren't necessarily critiqued for at the festivals. So it's just like, once it starts rolling out to the general audiences and other critics, you know, we'll really see, like, the major reactions from that.
Right. And then finally, if for whatever reason you do end up liking the Joker movie despite not having, like, the Agent Liberty storyline, like, it's the kind of hypocrisy that I think you exactly you'll be forgiven for. Plus, I dare to say, I don't know Shang, but I dare to say that he is not who we are worried about being, you know, whose mind we're worried about being changed or, you know, in any way brainwashed by a film that suggests that you sympathize with a white terrorist. So, like, it's still going to exist even if we all dislike it, and it will still have, if it does change someone or mold someone's opinion, it will do that regardless. So you can still like things and then say it's problematic because of this, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so back to news. That was our feedback and news in one. We also have a happy occasion, which is that Melissa Benoist and Chris Wood got married over the weekend. Yay. Or Labor Day weekend. Yay! We don't really know who was there. We don't know exactly when they got married. We think it was in Ojai, but I'm real happy for them and their private love. Anyone have your thoughts on them and their love?
No, it was in Ojai. It was on Ojai, Sunday. Yeah. That was confirmed. And then they also, the only guests list that they released were like Kevin Smith was there. Paul Wesley from the Vampire Diaries was there. And Odette Annabelle, who played Rain.
Aww.
Yeah.
Like, why would you confirm that instead of, like, Kyler Lee?
Right, any of the other Arrowverse people.
Yeah.
It's kind of... Yeah, but, you know, it's nice. We can assume that if they were there, then plenty of other people were there.
Yeah.
So that's nice. But, yeah, I wish them a happy life. Happy wife, happy life. Okay. and, yes, I do think we can talk a little bit about the Titans drama. It's unclear exactly what is going on, but... the Titans cast used to be very close, especially the ladies. Anna would be on, like, you know, Minka's Instagram, like, every day. With him posting, like, pictures of them and with Connor Leslie, etc. And then it seems like, what, like, at the end of June, maybe, they stopped posting them together, which I guess maybe filming was done. I don't know. And then Anna unfollowed Minka and Connor, who did the same, except that only recently on Anna's Minka's refollowed, and that was the last thing I heard about it. I don't know if there's any, you know, other further
Connor
updates
ever unfollowed, but Minka apparently unfollowed and then refollowed.
But Anna did unfollow both of them, right?
Yeah.
Oh, she unfollowed Connor as well?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So it seems like there was some kind of falling out, there was some kind of misunderstanding, you know. I don't know who initiated it. We don't really know any of the details. But it's unfortunate because they seemed so close before.
Oh, and she followed them back again. I just went to check, and she did follow Minka and Connor back.
Oh, okay.
They've reconciled.
Well, I mean, they've reconciled, or fans noticed, and then they know that fans noticed, so they rectified it.
Well, I don't know how you don't notice that. Like, she only follows, like, 50 people. Like, that's pretty noticeable if she didn't.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. So... so whether they actually reconciled or they just were like, okay, let's not stir up conversation, they fixed that, which is more than we can say for some cast feuds. So, and furthermore, like, you know, I know people have been like, sort of like bringing this up, but I don't think you can really compare Minka with Danielle regardless, because Minka has been very vocally outspoken in favor of Anna and defense, you know. Defending her position on the show to fans, etc. So
yeah, there hasn't really been any kind of, I mean, the season just started, but there hasn't any been kind of hints or suggestions that Minka would suddenly flip the script and start going hard for like a Dick Dawn like romance or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or like icing Anna out of like episode opportunities or something, you know, like that. So what it was just, it seems like friend beef that.
Yeah.
Hopefully that is over with. We'll see. Either that or they have learned to keep it off social media. So
yeah. I mean, I guess we'll be able to tell if they start reposting about each other since the season started. So there's like room for content. So if we don't get any content,
that's true.
Minka posted like a story of like one of their table reads, and you can see Anna in it. She's mainly like focusing on like a dog in like one of the other people's laps, but I mean, Anna's in the story, so
I don't know. She didn't cut her out.
Cut her out. So
she didn't crop her like some people did recently.
we shall be keeping an eye on that. In the meantime, we know that Jonathan Skaich, however you say his name, sorry man, Jonah Hex. I will be back for the Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover, presumably as one of the many heroes and villains across the multiverse who has been called upon to stop the end of it.
So, and Stephen has read the script of, or like read the plot line or whatever, the synopsis for the crossover. And Candace retweeted, which means I hope that she is actually getting
excited
for stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. She did say, like, you know, she doesn't have any details, but it sounds mind blowing, et cetera, whatever. So yay for our minds being blown. Also exciting news. It seems like Matt Reeves is looking to cast a woman of color, for Catwoman, which apparently code for black for Catwoman. Yeah.
He said he was looking for like a Zoe Kravitz type. So basically either black or biracial.
Or biracial. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, you know, the whole like Zoe Kravitz type, I mean, can we get a little bit more creative? Like, I like her and she's great, but like, you know.
But it's just like what they've been doing with the whole Tessa Thompson type, you know? Yeah. Like, there's a run
Tessa
for
Thompson,
these
Zoe Kravitz, Daisy Bates, Nega, Zendaya, you know, all of these people have something in common. if you compare them to a paper bag, you'd probably see what I mean. But I mean, like, and it's like they say like casting like a woman of color when, you know, just say black. If that's what you're, if you're looking for a Zoe Kravitz type, you want like a black woman, just say black. Instead of, you know, because I was looking at like one of like the tweets about the looking for a woman of color to be Catwoman. And then you have all of these reactions like, oh, Vanessa Hudgens, or oh, I think like Anna something, Ana de Armas or something like that. All these like white looking women that are technically, you know, non-white or whatever. When like the actual description is Zoe Kravitz. Just say what you mean, people. Be specific. It's okay.
Yep. Yeah. I'm glad Catwoman will be in it at all. And I'm glad that she will hopefully be not white, aka black. If she's Afro-Latina, that would be my favorite thing.
Perfect.
Yeah.
But I'm just glad she exists.
We know it won't be Kristen Stewart, and so Twilight fans will be crushed.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
I think Vanessa Kirby was like the other big rumor, which is obviously not the case now. But yeah.
I don't even know who that is.
She is blonde. That's all you need to know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's not even right in any way. But anyway. So, yay, Catwoman. Welcome, hopefully, to the DC, not EU, whatever they're calling that. Worlds of DC. All right. Now we've got some DC TV spoilers, if this link will ever work for me, from TV Line.
I mean, a lot of it's some of the same stuff. For Flash, we have, I guess, like, the new thing is that Iris will be involved in a very deep mystery, per Eric Wallace. And obviously, the Central City Citizen will grow up real fast. And he's dubbing the first half of the season as graphic novel number one. Yeah, so, like, and he says that everyone will get to react to Barry's disappearance in a unique, sometimes tragic way. We can assume the tragic will be probably like Iris and the rest of the West family. Maybe Cisco. And then for Arrow, we have that Oliver thinks he's basically doing this whole crisis thing alone for the monitor. But then what's interesting is that David Ramsey says Diggle has always been on Oliver's side and it will be no different in season 8. We'll see them get even tighter in ways that we haven't seen before. So maybe he will be joining Oliver in his quest for whatever. And then in terms of like Arrow in the future, Team Arrow in the future, Guggenheim said that we get to do something with Team Arrow 2.0 that we didn't get a chance to do with 1.0, which is tell the story of their growing pains. So I assume that they'll have like more time to just flesh out.
Yes.
Exactly.
I seem to remember them saying that, or it was either Steven or somebody was saying that he gets like a buddy cop. It was supposed to buddy cop duo or whatever. It's supposed to be unexpected, and I feel like if it's Diggle, then it's like super expected. So I'm still.
Yeah, either it's Diggle or it's like Tom Cavanaugh's character.
Maybe like he's saying like David is like, David's saying that Diggle's by Oliver's side in spirit, like he's gonna carry on like the legacy while Oliver is off doing whatever.
Yeah, it's a little weird because you're expecting Oliver to be isolated, and yet here we are.
Yeah,
it would be real weird. I did half expect Oliver hanging out with Diggle while his, you know, wife and child cannot be near him.
Yeah. That would be really weird. I mean, I guess they could like put in, I don't know what like Tom Cavanaugh's pariah is going to do throughout like the first half of the season. So I don't know if he'll pop up or not, but we shall see. And for Supergirl, they brought up the whole technology aspect, Black Mirror part of it. But in terms of like the more emotional core, that will be Kara and Lena at the center. So their angst will basically bring them, their friendship into focus. And they'll, that was it. Alex and Kelly will get to know each other better, which we already knew. And then, of course, Nia and Brainy will have a more challenging romantic journey ahead of them. Because Brainy is a little different. And Robert Rovner did say that they're putting their own spin on Akrata. And one that is unique their to own their show. Means,
like, makes it more that if was she Argentinian?
I think so, yes.
Yes, she's Argentinian. The actress is.
I hope that's what they mean, I guess. Because obviously the character in the comics has very specific like Mexican origins.
Yeah.
So
I feel like it's kind of similar to not calling Zari, who is a Muslim computer genius, ISIS.
Right.
Like that's fine, but they're like, okay, it's actually not that character.
Yes, it's like we've realized the error of our ways and we're fixing it.
Yeah.
In terms of Eve though, they said that there's a big twist that it's something that the fans might not be expecting. Which
I think
is
that she's expecting.
Yeah. Like surprise. And then of course the Leviathans will be like they have an agenda for Earth and their arc will be a season long thing. So besides Kara battling technology and villains who are using technology against others, she'll also be battling the Leviathans, of course. And that is that on that. They did not have any Black Lightning news. So
well yeah.
Sad times. And no one has Batwoman news, apparently. So.
Oh, yes. Batwoman refuses to have any promotion, except, like, the other accounts keep promoting Batwoman, except for the Batwoman people who are part of the actual cast.
That's so, fun times. Fun times.
Yeah.
So, now we will move into the actual episode, which will be hosted by our beloved May, and it will be Titans all day, every day, until something other than Titans shows up.
In 3 weeks.
Yes. So proceed.
All right. Titans is back. If everyone has forgotten, someone was asking on Twitter, it's like, I think it was Suara. He's like, is DC Universe worth the $75 a year? I was like, no. Yes. So for everyone who's watching Titans, it is back. Season 2, episode 1, called Trigon. So this episode was kind of supposed to be the season finale of season 1. And that's exactly how it played out. So it's the continuation of Dick being warped by Trigon. Raven having to, like, fight everyone to win, basically. The rest of the group, so Dawn and Hank go to Jason, pick him up because apparently Batman's over with the Justice League issue that he has to take care of. And they all go to the house and they all end up with the demon Black Eyes. And they kill Beast Boy, breaking Raven's heart, bringing Trigon out in his full CGI glory. He walks out, destroys some grass. Then Raven is able to bring Dick back.
Grass?
Yeah, like he walks and the grass turns brown and gray or whatever. And that's about as far as he got to destroying the world. And then Raven gets into Dick's mind, tells him he's a good person, remember who he is, blah, blah, blah. He wakes up. Everybody else does. They all sort of live happily ever after. Well, sort of. Everybody seems to go their own separate ways, except that Dick takes the kids to Titan's Tower, but he makes a pit stop at Bruce's house first so that he can tell him that he is not to blame for his childhood. He needed the keys and the money to the...
Give me the keys to Titan's Tower, Bruce. Yes,
he needed the penthouse. So he needed the approval for the penthouse. And to sort of make amends, which that was a weird scene. Anyway, we'll get to that later. And then Corey goes off to, she doesn't say she's going to go find her home or anything like that, but she does go off to have her own thing on the side. Wonder Girl goes off somewhere too, but we don't know. Anyway, the Titans are back, and that's all you really need to know.
No one matters except Dick. That's the moral of the story.
Yeah, Raven has the little, you know, her little thing in the forehead now. I can't remember what it's called, but she is Raven. She's tapped into all of her powers. She has a family, and the Titans are finally the Titans.
Raven, oh my god.
Yes, and that is that. Did it spark joy?
That recap sparked joy. That was very enjoyable.
Recap sparked more joy than the episode.
Yeah, this episode was exactly what I was thinking it was going to be. Like, I didn't come into this episode with, like, the most positive feelings ever, just because I was still pissed off that they decided to cut this storyline in the middle in the way that it did. I guess, like, I'm glad that the Trigon storyline is over. You know, we can do something new. Gar got to play a somewhat active role, even if it was only as, like, human shield for Rachel and getting his ass kicked. It didn't spark joy, but it did not spark joy, but, like, the whole, just knowing that Donna and Corey are hopefully going to get, like, a stronger bond in season two, so, like, their little kind of bickering, and, you know, Donna, like, you're doing it wrong, Troy, and then, like, Corey's like, come to me, solutions, not bitch-ass complaining, you know, that little kind of back and forth, Dick and Corey's goodbye scene, like, when they're all by the new minivan or little like SUV, whatever. And she's like, I'm glad you're taking the kids. He's like, well, this model seats 5, like you can come too. So that was really sweet and cute. Kind of like dad taking the kids on vacation while mom goes off on a business trip somewhere. So, that was great, you know? And then I actually liked the final maybe scene of them driving to Titan's Tower in San Fran, you know, but because I guess that means it's like starting something new, but I'm just saying, like, y'all could have did this at the end of season one. So yeah, Tati.
Yes, what can you say that you did not already so eloquently say for yourself? I did not find much joy in the premiere, mostly for that same reason that you're bringing up, which is that it was literally, clearly the season finale of last season, and I didn't see any explanation for why they should have split it up. Like, it's just, is as mystifying as ever.
Like, the only reason is probably that they didn't have a Bruce, and so, which they clearly needed to move them to Titan's Tower, but, I mean... That's that kind of like weak sauce reason, because you still could have had them like going somewhere and have that be like the end, but
right. Whatever. Or you could have said, you know, whatever. He could have been like,
I saw Bruce off screen.
Yeah, or yeah. Not necessarily. Like we're gonna go to Titan's Tower, and then you know Jason be like, oh, but what's Bruce gonna say? And be like, oh, I'll talk to Bruce, and then you know we'll see that next season. But whatever. So okay, that happened. Since this is about the sparking joy section, I will say the fact that
I was
going
to say y'all jump to the dislikes.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about the likes. It's just that there's not much for me to like. Okay, it's fine. I'll talk about this in the dislikes. In the likes, I like that they are at Titan's Tower and that the interactions that they had in that like final quote unquote final scene were much lighter. It did feel like the start of something new, like of a happier chapter. I think that maybe it does suggest that season two could be slightly more entertaining in tone. So I'm happy for that. I also liked the final Dick and Corey scene, like Jessica mentioned. I liked that it sounded like they're splitting up and he's taking the kids. But he's still hoping that
they're not splitting up. He's taking the kids on a road trip. And mom's like, I don't do camping.
I mean, I wish that she had said where she was going. But sure, they're not splitting up for good. Presumably, you know, we'll see them again together again very shortly. And on my super inappropriate ship side, I did like that Gar was the, like, key to breaking or making Rachel's heart. I was like, yes, that is correct. And they had that whole little, like, fluffy ass montage of their relationship thus far, and I was like, all right, I enjoyed that. I feel like while Gar got the short end of the stick, at least they played into him being like the like innocent, you know, beating heart of the group or whatever. So yay for that. It was nice to see all the Titans and like outer circle Titans all together in one place, having banded together as the quote-unquote cavalry for this fight that they did not even need to show up to. But
I forgot, I like Donna's reaction to Jason. It's like, who the fuck is it and why is it in this outfit?
Yes, that was fun. And there was even a little bit of, like, you know, Hank just like being super annoyed with Jason. I was like, okay, I see that we're establishing dynamics between these characters and that we will see more of them in the future. There was like a couple moments like that I liked. And for myself, I personally enjoyed after the, or like at the very end, like when near the end of the Trigon battle, when like Rachel, you know, wakes up and she like, I guess also woke Dick up. I don't remember what happened exactly. But she's like, I had to go talk to my dad. And I definitely thought that she meant Dick. And I was like, yes! But no, it was her actual stupid dad. I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to think. I feel like that's it. Not much else. Oh, okay, you know what? Isai Morales existing.
Oh, and so yes.
Getting to see Deathstroke at the end did please me. I'm looking forward to how he's going to play into the season and how he's going to change things up and how his kids are going to change things up. So, yeah. That part sparked a lot of joy.
Yeah. I want to say, like, the actor who played Trigon was really good, even though he got shit stuff. But, like, the 2-3-4 minutes, whatever, that he had to talk and, you know, show us how evil he was fun to watch. I really did enjoy Donna and Corey's bantering, because I feel like Jess said, that's just gonna open the door to something more of their friendship down the line. Just Jason kind of being the psycho that he is, but standing out in a sense where it's like, oh, look, he has a heart and he wants to be included. And I just thought that was really sweet. What else? Yes, Corey and Dick. I would have liked the scene to be longer and like more to it, but I did like that their goodbye and this kind of the sense that there was like an open door for her to come back whenever she wanted to, because she is part of the family. So that was really nice. And then the super cheesy moments of when like Rachel had to try and save Dick from himself essentially. And when Gar was being beaten up for her, not that he was beating up. That wasn't what sparked joy, not him being beaten up. But just like the fact that he was, like you said, like the beating heart of the group and why her heart essentially broke to begin with. So that was really great. What else sparked joy for me?
Cheesy.
Like it was bad, but it was like some of the better moments of the episode. Just because like the execution wasn't great, but like I got what they were trying to go for it. So for everyone who says this show is like great but refuses the cheese of other shows, I don't know what to tell you. What else? Yeah, the the whole montage at the end, the fact that it does seem like just the even the lighting is much brighter in this episode in comparison to like the other episodes. Yes, the whole first season was great. It does mean that things are looking up. Maybe they'll have more daytime scenes. That's what it seems like. So that's nice. Yeah, but I think that was like really it. I guess Rachel turning into what we know Raven to really like her, you know, what she looks like with the like the red piece in her forehead and whatnot. That was, you know, finally seems like we're getting the Titans that everybody wanted in season one. Yeah, but that's all. Now on to our bigger section. What did not spark joy?
I mean, like the entire episode. I guess like because what I was, you know, the whole thing about this does not make sense as like a fresh start for your season two. It just felt like a really kind of mediocre way to kick off the season by like ending a storyline instead of starting like a new one. Like, I feel like there could have been more with Deathstroke. If they had finished Trigon in season one and they had opened up in season two and they had, you know, given us more hints of Deathstroke and why he's back and all that kind of stuff, that would have kicked off like a new mystery. But here it just felt like, you know, I'm waiting for something new and I still have to deal with something old. So I, you know, I couldn't really get into the new season that way. You know, like the way that the whole season finale, Dick got an entire episode for his mindfuck. The rest of the Titans got turned dark in like 15 seconds or less. And like not all of their mind prisons made sense. I think Corey's was the most like straightforward and to, you know, why she had to do what she had to do. And it wasn't really like any kind of darkness in her path, in her past, as much as it was, you know, she's kind of one of the people that would do the hard things, even if it's not something that she wants to do, the greater good kind of deal. I thought that Donna's back, unless we're going to get more of it, I don't really know why we needed to know that her dad died in a fire by some guy that she couldn't find. Because we didn't know much about her past before then. Hank and Don doing drugs together, and that was the end of that. That was, like, the most random one, I think. I don't even know how to, like, what is that? What is the correlation? I don't understand. And then even Jason's mind fucks are hand-me-downs. Because he stepped into Dick's dream and kind of like picked up where Dick left off. And I feel like it shouldn't have been that hard to turn Jason anyway, because he's basically like kind of black on the inside already. You go through all of that and they all beat up on Gar. And then at the end, the only one Rachel feels like saving is Dick, which is pretty much on brand for Titan season one. I really thought him being the key meant that if Rachel saved him, then a clear-headed Dick could get to the rest of the Titans and bring them out while she deals with her father. But nope. Like, it just meant that she's going to use Dick as a trial run to see if she had enough power to take on her dad. Like, once she saved Dick, no one else mattered, and she just went after her dad. And I was like, okay. I thought that he would actually be doing something if he was, like, around, you know, like, whether it's him and Gar take on the rest of the Titans part two, or like I said, like him saving people, but no, everyone just stands around and watches Rachel go after Trigon. And then Trigon, like in his final form. Oh, well, let me back up. Like the whole like house, like I know May liked the cheesiness. I just thought it was too cheesy.
I was trying to find something good, Jessica.
I'm gonna jump, Dick. Save me. It was just... okay. Sure. It was just really cheesy to me. It was really, really cheesy. Especially since she didn't do it for anybody else. But Trigon...
I agree with that, yeah.
Yeah. Trigon in his final form was just so unimpressive to me. I was expecting, like, big purple, intimidating long horns. And then I got, like, a minotaur. Barely pushing 6 feet. And like May said, the most dangerous thing he did was kill the grass. So like Thanos was bigger than Trigon. So it was like I can't even say like I was whelmed, because it definitely needs like an under in front of it to really signify how underwhelming that climax wound up being. The best part is that they finished it with half the episode left. I didn't mention meeting Bruce in Spark Joy section. I think I was really for this Batman. What's his name? I blanked because I forgot his
Ian
name.
Ian Glenn.
I was really excited for him as Batman, but just like watching the scene between him and Dick, I just kept feeling like, I feel like this is like Batman beyond Batman. Like, yeah. Ian Glenn is like Terry McGinnis is Batman, but I feel like he plays too old even for like Dick's, like it should, like he should play a little bit younger. And then I don't even think he changed his accent. So I'm like, when did Batman just like switch national origins? I'm pretty sure Gotham is located in the United States.
Think he was trying. He was trying to speak an American accent, but it was not happening.
Maybe he'll grow on me as the season goes, but I just kept thinking like, this is like Batman beyond Bruce. This is not, you know, Batman and Robin Bruce. So yeah. Oh, and one last thing. I also didn't like that we didn't get to see everyone kind of split up, but we only got to see Dick because, you know, Dick and the kids, because that's the only kind of scene that matters. But I feel like if it is season two and you had all these reshoots that you were going to do, then maybe you should also show some scenes that shows why they are all going their separate ways. Like, why does Corey need to separate and do something? You could start off like her mystery. You could show what Hank and Don trying to work on themselves or do, or what they plan to do, or what Donna plans to do. And I feel like that was just kind of dropped off and not really set up very well.
Mm-hmm. For me, the biggest thing, which you already mentioned, is that it was such an anticlimax of a conclusion that it just begged the question of why they would need to split it off. Why wouldn't you just end it, like end the previous season with Rachel destroying her father? It doesn't make any sense. You leave it off on this big cliffhanger, like, oh no, what are we going to do? And then you resolve it in half an episode. It definitely did not bode well for the tension or stakes of the rest of the season. And also, it also, you know, underscored, which you already mentioned too, the disparity between Dick and Rachel, technically, because it's Rachel's villain, and the rest of the Titans. Because we spent a whole episode just immersing ourselves in Dick's nightmare land and getting to the point where he does the horrible thing of killing Batman, which then turns into the dark side. And then the other is like, Corey walks in, kill me. Okay. And I was like, what? This is so stupid. So that was really annoying. Like, obviously I wasn't expecting a full episode for each of their little nightmare lands, but you could resolve this by having first off a joint nightmare land, having everyone turn dark at the same time, other than maybe Rachel and Gar, in one episode, and thus seeing how all these different worlds create one crazy reality and how they all go dark in it. Or if you had just not spent so fucking long on dicks, but whatever. So yeah, that was dumb. The Dove and Hawk one made absolutely no sense. I didn't even understand whose nightmare it was. I thought it was Dawn's, because I was like, wouldn't the dark side for Dawn be to like join him, like to fall down that spiral with him? Whereas he's already doing that shit all the time, so that's just normal for him. But either way, it seemed like they can't even be separate in their fucking nightmare land. So whatever. And I'm trying to think of like, and there's anything else in Nightmare Land that I didn't like. And yeah, like you said, the Donna one just seemed like deleted scenes from her episode or something. And now we know that Donna's dad died and she doesn't know who did it. Okay. And this is dark side time. So yeah, it just, once again, it doesn't feel like it's leading towards a really like bigger theme. Like, I didn't get like, fight your dark side, or face your dark side and overcome it. It was just like, okay, now our eyes are going to go black and we're going to be demons. Yeah. And then it's not going to matter because this dude's going to disappear in 3 seconds. And as I told Jessica while we were watching, he looked like a rejected idea for what Hellboy was going to, like bad Hellboy concept art was what he looked like. So I was not in any way frightened of him. And also when he killed Rachel's mom.
Yeah.
Not that I have no, you know, I don't miss her. I'm not sad she died.
But the fact it's the principle.
Yeah. Exactly. It's the principle. A, it's the principle. And B, it's the fact that we built her, like, she was how Rachel fell into the trap. We built her up. We built up that connection that Rachel was going to feel to her. And then she's dead. And Rachel probably doesn't even know that she's dead. It doesn't even matter. Like, she had no react to it. And I guess it's like, well, you did turn out to be a demon worshiper, so I'm not sad about this. But at the very least, show her reaction to her mom getting murdered. Like, okay, why was she even here? Just so that we can be like, yeah, wow, I guess he really is evil. Like, the fact that he literally is the devil did not make him evil before that point. Whatever. It's just, again, just a thing that happens for the sake of it happening.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't like that. Then, outside of that, there's just, I feel like there's, like, sometimes the dialogue just feels like they want to say something snarky now. And so I'm just like, is this really good dialogue? Or was this just kind of like the placeholder dialogue of, and they will bicker. And then you never got around to, like, making it better. You just left it. You're like, well, they bickered. We got what we wanted. So, whatever. Also, as I actually liked, in and of itself, a scene where Dick goes and apologizes to Bruce and is like, hey, you know what? I realize that you're a human being too, and you're just doing your best, and you're like a parent. Please give me the keys to this house. Is actually good. I like it. But, like you already said, his accent, and he doesn't feel like the Batman to Dick's Robin or to Jason's Robin. But also, I just feel like it wasn't earned by the nightmare that we saw. He had no reaction externally. We don't know how he feels with the fact that he killed Batman in his dream. Mm-hmm. And it even that dream didn't, like, there was nothing in it that justified him waking up and being like, you know what, actually, Batman was not that bad. So all I can imagine is that he just wants
the keys.
Titan's tower. Yeah, and that's what he thinks Bruce will like to hear. So he said it, which is unfortunate because I thought it was a nice scene in theory. And like you said also, we don't know where the rest of them are going. Once again, it feels like they are second-class citizens to Dick, and then by extension, Rachel. And Rachel's, like, only gets to be there because of how, you know, important her connection to Dick is. So yeah, like, even this is a show about us, so I have to do it. It's literally what it came across as. But anyway, I just one line of Corey saying that she wants to go to Tamarin, or she wants to find Tamarin, or she wants to learn about her past would have been helpful. The rest of them, the rest of them are second class citizens, so I don't care what they're off to go do. But Corey should not be in that category. Doesn't make any sense. If you're adding stuff to the episode, why not add that? Because the premiere should be where they set up the seeds of the different storylines. And they didn't. The only seeds they set up were Titan's Tower and S.I. Morales, you know, the Deathstroke family. So they didn't even follow up on Superboy. So, yeah, just one line telling us that Tamarin is what she's going to go do would have been helpful. But, oh, well, we didn't get that. At least we have 13 episodes this season. So we can imagine we're going to have more time to plant those seeds.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all of this. I think they had a lot of great concepts, but they never really brought any of them together because they just had, like you said, like miniature pieces of the puzzle, and then they had trouble connecting them or making like a fully fleshed out story where you understood exactly the themes and why this character had to get from A to B. And even with the premiere feeling like a second half of the season finale just makes it not that exciting, because I was looking at the time when I was watching and it was like they spent maybe a good half hour on Trigon, and then the rest of the 22 minutes was getting the Titans together and going to see Bruce and going to the tower. So it was like a half an hour to take out a huge villain that you spent all season trying to, you know, raise up. And he finally did. And he was snuffed out like a candle, mm-hmm. you know? And then Yeah, I didn't like his look either. It was just, and he just stood there. Like, you're supposed to be what? You're destroying the world. You're going to create chaos. You want your daughter to come with you. And then you're just standing there looking out into the forest, just assuming she's going to come after the way that you've treated her. Like, that makes no sense. And then the entire team's presence during the fight was unnecessary. Like, the only thing that they did was beat up Gar.
Yeah.
They didn't add anything to those scenes particularly, even though, like, I guess they just had to be there. I don't know, because they had to part at the end. Right. But then they just stood there, and like bringing in, like having even like Dawn wake up from her coma and she's like, we have to go get Jason. This woman fell off of a roof and was in a coma. And then she's just walking around like nothing happened to her. It was just like bizarre to me.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah. And especially since they didn't really have anything to do in the episode, they could have just written them out. Like, there was no need for them to be there at all. It was just like super underwhelming. I just feel like there's, like you said about the dialogue, there were moments like where I think it was Donna who was talking about the black makeup or whatever, and, oh, I would have preferred like the like regular eyeliner or something, like a makeup joke. It was just bad. I was like, oh, this is cringy.
Wait, where was that?
It was like that? After they came to and
Trigon was defeated. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and she made that comment about like the eye makeup or whatever. Mm-hmm. That wasn't
and it
actually
was eye roll.
Yeah, yes, yeah. So much. And it's just like they're trying to balance this darkness with this humor and all these other things. And it's not working. And they don't have, I feel like they don't have a sense of all of the characters quite yet, even now, after so many episodes, that they're really into just making some plot work. And they're not really into anything else, it seems. Like, even when they introduced Deathstroke, who looked really great, you know? I didn't get a sense of like what it is that he wanted, other than like, oh, he saw Jason Todd on TV, and I guess we're supposed to assume he wants revenge on the Titans for something or whatnot. But it just didn't stick. It just felt like they really wanted to get started on something else,
right?
But they half-assed it. Like, they could have kept him to the second episode if they were just gonna try to wrap up all the Trigon stuff. Like, especially since they left this episode until season two. Then they could have really like introduced him and given him like a mini backstory in the beginning of the next episode, and then things would have really gotten, you know, going. But they just kind of like half-ass everything, wrapping it up neatly, very quickly. It was super underwhelming. No one was scared. And it was just like, it felt like a large waste of time. Mm-hmm. And in terms of like the conversation that Dick had with Bruce, I liked it, and I liked the idea of it. But I feel like it would have worked better if, because he spent so much of last season battling Bruce as Batman, I feel like it would have been a more powerful moment if he had confronted him in the Batsuit.
Mm.
You know, like, as like taking him down that way, because that's who he became, like working alongside Batman as Robin, versus like just Bruce as a person, as a father figure. So I don't know, I feel like that would have worked, because like the whole setting, just like them sipping tea, it just like something was off.
It looked like he was chatting with Alfred. It looked like, yes! He was like, hey Alfred, please let me know this.
Bruce isn't here, but at least talk to Alfred.
Yeah, so it was just really off-putting. Like, there was something wrong with the scene. Like, he was in another dream and there was something shady going on, you know? That's just how it felt. I hope that, obviously, he'll probably be in other episodes, so we'll get to see him more. But the vibe, there was just something off with the vibe. I feel like the best scenes came at the end when they finally had like a lighter feeling. They were in Titan's Tower. It was the brand new start. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, like the rest of the episode,
like the start of season two.
Yeah,
nothing
exactly.
Else before that.
Yeah, everything else is just like, I don't know why I wasted 50 minutes watching this, but okay. So I hope that this episode is not indicative of the rest of the season, because that would be really disappointing.
Right.
I feel like it can't be, because half of this was garbage from season one. So I feel like, you know, if we take the last 5 or so minutes where it's a lot brighter and just like look at that, hopefully that is like the true indicator of season two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. All right. Any other thoughts on Titans?
Not that I want to share.
Yeah, no, not really. Not really. I mean, I'm like you guys said, the part that gave me hope was the part in Titan's Tower. I think that that is indicative that we're going to have more fun dynamics next season, and a lighter tone. Or not next season, haha. This season, but you know, it should have
been like,
next
season.
Felt like,
oh, a cliffhanger for next season.
Exactly, exactly. So yeah, so I look forward, quote unquote, as cautiously as I can to next week.
Yeah, so we'll see and report back to you. Now we're on our regularly scheduled program back on Podomatic. You can listen to us there, as always, on Apple Podcasts and wherever you listen to podcasts. Send us an email, ladieswgumption@gmail.com, over on Tumblr at ladieswgumption.tumblr.com, and we will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.